The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
If something's moved around the house, then it's Elsie.
Yeah.
So whenever I lose something, I'm like, oh, well, that's Elsie again. And Ruth's like, no,
took me keys again.
Yeah.
Let's do this. It's the Still Parents podcast supported by Global's Make Some Noise. I'm Dan. I'm here with Ryan from the Lily Mae Foundation and Matt from the Lily Mae Foundation. How are you, gents? Are you well?
Good, thank you.
Yep, very well, thanks.
Our guest on the Still Parents podcast, this particular episode, we've had on once before, and it was during last year's 2023 Baby Loss Awareness Week. That will be in the description for this. And as promised, Ian is joining us on this episode for a full chat to really get into your story. Your wife, Ruth. So before, let's get to know you a little bit for people who haven't heard you before. So how long have you been with Ruth?
I've been with Ruth. We've been married just over 6 years now. We were together 3 years before that. We met on internet dating, Plenty of Fish.
I remember Plenty of Fish.
Do you remember that?
Never heard of it.
Yeah. It's like one of the first ones.
Right?
Yeah, it was no swiping. It was just, my mate Craig used to come around my old flat back in the day, and he'd sit there and he didn't have internet, and he'd come around, you know, when someone's just come around and sit on my sofa and just use my internet. I'm like, mate, you're going to talk to me or what? He's like, no, I've just met Sandra.
That's a really, really good name for a dating site. When you think about, like, when people turn around and say there's plenty more fish in the sea.
Yeah. So you met on Plenty of Fish. Who got in touch with who first?
I think I got in touch with
Ruth. You can't say I think, you know, come on.
Yeah. It was just, I can't even remember what the first message was.
Yeah.
Hi, how are you doing?
I can't wait till we get the insert there.
How are you doing? Oh, no. How you doing? How you doing? Damn it, Carl. Go wait in the hall.
Now, the reason, obviously, why this podcast exists in the first place is because our guests, as well as Ryan and Matt, have lost babies. You've maybe lost your baby. Maybe you're listening because a friend or a family member has, and you're looking for ways to offer support and understand the emotions and everything which happens during this, at whatever period during the grief journey that is. Ian Rowlands, we alluded to it in your mini episode, but we were mostly talking about how you and what Baby Loss Awareness Week means to you. But you and your partner Ruth, you went through a loss, and it was in the towards the start of 2022. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, and it was a little girl called Elsie.
Elsie, yeah.
So what we do, and we would like you to take as much time as you need and as much detail as you would like to get into, and talk to us and everyone watching and listening to this episode about what happened with you guys leading up to the loss of Elsie.
Okay, thank you. I'll go right from the very start. We'd been married 2 years and we'd been trying to get pregnant for a bit. We had a little cat, a long-haired tortoiseshell cat, Duchess her name was. She came poorly, she had food poisoning. And we lost her. And then that month, we did actually get pregnant. So it's kind of, I mean, obviously a cat's a cat, but you kind of...
Well, people get really attached to their pets, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so we, and then we got pregnant, and we got through in pregnancy, and then the first scan, everything was hunky-dory and that, and we could see the little alien. In Ruth, yeah. And then on about the 20-week scan, we actually went for a private scan first to find out the gender of it and found out it was a little girl. And then on the 26-week scan or something, they couldn't see the heart properly.
Right.
So just because Elsie was being a pain and wriggling, and so we had more scans, and as more scans went on, it became clearer that her heart wasn't formed correctly. She had what's called HLHS, which is hypoplastic left heart syndrome, which is the fourth chamber of your heart.
Yeah.
The bottom left-hand one, pumping one, wasn't working. So in effect, she had half a working heart.
How common is that?
Not very common at all, but it happens. But we obviously did research and as the doctors and found out more, they gave us the option whether to continue with the pregnancy, but obviously we had to, because we'd done research by this point.
Yeah.
And we had heard success stories of little ones who had made it. A mate of mine, his mom had adopted a little girl who had the similar condition to what Elsie had.
Mm.
And she was 13 and lived happy and healthy. So we went through with it, and we had more scans and that, and we decided it was best to wait until she was born so we could get a proper picture.
Right.
So we had her on the 15th of March, 2022, straight away. They put her onto the... because when the baby's in the womb, it doesn't use its own heart. It survives off mum's blood, so that's a way she could get to full term.
Yeah.
So once she was born, they kept a stent in using a different part of the heart, so it closed that part so she could carry on living.
Okay.
But the procedure, because the doctors had given us a roadmap of what they were going to do, it would be three open heart surgeries. One at...
Three?
Yeah, one at about five days old.
Oh, my God.
One at about 9 months, and then one about 3 to 4 years
That's
old.
That's madness, man.
And so... And so we got... Unfortunately, she wasn't strong enough to make it to the first operation, and she passed away at 5 days old on the 20th of March.
And you'd got the full term with her, Ian, as well? Like,
yeah, she did. She'd gone full term and full proper weight and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything was... There was a shadow on one of the kidneys, so they weren't sure whether that was working or not. But you can survive with one kidney.
Yeah, and
obviously, we said we're going to wait until she was born before we get a true picture of what was going on.
If you don't mind reliving it and talking about it, what were your... In the immediate hours after Elsie was born, what the communication was, and how you and Ruth were handling it or feeling, and what sort of support you were being offered?
Well, if I can go back a stage to when she was born, we were due to have her at New Cross Hospital in Wolverhampton.
Yeah.
And we needed a level 3 neonatal unit, and they had 2 at New Cross in Wolverhampton. But when Ruth's waters broke, we got to Wolverhampton, and the neonatal units we needed were full already. So they were like, all right, we're going to ship you off to somewhere else.
Right.
So either going to be Nottingham, Leeds, or Birmingham Women's Hospital. And we were like, all right, great. They managed to get us in at Birmingham Women's. So we shipped up there.
Yeah, if you're not listening to this from the UK, to get from, you live in, so near Birmingham, to get from Birmingham to Leeds is what, it's at least a couple of hours, isn't it?
Yeah. And
which I know if you're in America, it's just nip into the shops, but for us, it's quite far.
But, so obviously, and we had her at Birmingham Women's in the end, and the day she was born, I wasn't leaving Ruth, so I ended up stopping on the floor of Ruth's bedroom. Yeah.
Has COVID finished at this point?
Yeah.
Just about. So you were cut, everything was like less restrictions, and they were cool with you doing it. Okay.
Yeah. Well, they gave me a blanket and on the hard floor, which wasn't very nice.
Oh, they're not happy about it?
Well, I wasn't moving, so.
Exactly. You've got to do what you got to do, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah.
It's your family.
But they were pretty decent about it.
Okay, fair enough.
And the next day, we were transferred to Birmingham Children's Hospital, up to Ward 11, which is a special heart baby unit, and we settled in there, and they took good care of Elsie. We were waiting for her to stabilise and that, and it was funny, on the Thursday, which was our first night home. This is a story, it's not related to Elsie at all, but it's just...
Go for it.
It's on our first night home, we drove home, and we stopped at Mackey's to get some food, and... went to the drive-thru, and there was a big queue of people going in. And when we were coming out, we'd just got our food. And then there was a car coming round the outside of the queue.
Yeah.
And it blocked up, and we, like, bumper to bumper.
Okay.
And then this driver got out of the car and started shouting at us.
And you stole his nuggets?
No, the last
cheeseburger.
Because we were obviously nose to nose, and he started going off on one at us.
Oh, so he'd come the wrong way around?
Yeah, he had. He'd nipped round the queue.
So he's going, you know, like people do that, don't they?
Yeah, and he started shouting at us because I think Ruth gestured at him, but he got out of the car and...
How dare you tell me I'm an idiot?
You know, yeah. You know what I'd have done in that, and it comes from the American office. Like, no. Honestly, you know, like when someone's trying to argue with you, if they start shouting, they just press the horn every time they talk. Beep. So they try and talk. Beep.
Yeah.
I reckon Ian twisted him up.
Yeah, man.
No.
The reason why Ryan, by the way, just mentioned I reckon Ian twisted him up is due to one of Ian's previous jobs, which we will get to later on. So there you go. So yeah, go on. Carry on with your Mackie story.
So this bloke was front of my car, banging on my thing, trying to get me out of the car.
This is in the drive-through lane.
Yeah. And so I went down my window and I said to it, because obviously
Which Maccas was it in?
Cannock. I can describe the car and the bloke if you want. But no.
Is that before or after?
Yeah.
But yeah. I went down my window and I said, look, get back in your car and get out of the way. And he went off and went, I've just repeated myself, and he did, bless him. But
bless him.
But and then we kept went on and had a bit of a laugh after that. But
this was on the way back from the hospital.
Yeah.
So at that point, you're in no mood to be
exactly.
Fucked with, are you?
Exactly.
Like that's the last thing.
Exactly. So I've kept my together, and
you can just swear, by the way, it's fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I can't. My parents listening.
Yeah. Kept your composure.
Yeah. And so. We dealt with that and then carried on. And, but then we went back and that's how we were just settling on the ward. And then on the Friday night, we were about to leave and they said, oh, her sats are a bit high. So we'll keep an eye on that. We were like, okay then. And then we went home. At 8:30 in Saturday morning, we got a phone call and they said, look, Elsie's taken the turn. She's gone down to the... What's it called? The
ITU.
Yeah.
Intensive care.
Intensive care, thank you. So we got in the car. We parked in the ambulance bay because they phoned us and said, you can park there. And then
they did?
Yeah, and then they said, look, just get here.
Yeah.
And they were doing the CPR on her when we got there, which is a sight which...
Yeah, you don't want to see.
And they said, there's nothing more we can do. So I said, look, can I... Going to get her out. And it's funny actually because she was still lying down. She was holding my finger while my finger was in her hand. I said, oh, she's just opened her eyes. And the doctor looked at me and said, mate, she couldn't. She even if she wanted to, she couldn't at this point. And I'm like, oh. And then they looked down and there they were, eyes open. And he's like, saying goodbye.
Oh, wow.
And then they turned off the machine and said, sorry. So I got her up out. In my arms, and we went to a quiet room, me and Ruth, and said goodbye there.
Did you stay in the hospital with her, Ian, or not?
Yeah.
Did you have some days with her in the hospital on a cold cot or anything after that, or not?
No.
Because so I it's just a question, because sometimes families do that with. Okay.
The pastor from the hospital came and gave his blessing and that. He gave us. A little gold heart, and he says, carry this heart in your wallet or whatever. Whenever you look at it, you'll always see Elsie. And
you
I've
got
still
it
got mine, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
Yeah, so, I mean, I always keep that with me in my pocket, and Ruth does the same, I know. And so then, obviously, the phone call to people to explain... When we'd had the phone call in the morning, we hadn't spoken to anybody or anything.
I was going to say, well, leading up to this, how had you been? You know, everyone has their own habits.
And we'd spoken to people and we'd put photos on Facebook of us and Elsie and that. But obviously, we received the phone call Saturday morning at 8:30 and everybody thought everything was all right.
Well, that's the thing, you've got to deal with that. Every person that you're calling, they're probably greeting you with a really excited tone because they're expecting. And then
so I always remember my phone call to my parents. My dad, he was happy and said, oh, how's things? And well, not good. It's like one of them things, how on earth would you break that news?
Yeah.
Were they close by, your family, like to come and be with you? Or
yeah. Well, obviously, like when there was no point in being. I mean, Ruth's dad came to the hospital,
right?
But we didn't stay around there, so we then we went on our way and went back home. And it's...
did you ever at any point think when you were transferred across to Children's Hospital, did they ever play on your mind that maybe she would never get to her first operation, or were you given information that gave you hope that she would get to that first operation?
There's always a best and worst case scenario, isn't it? But and I'm always a positive person, so I always look at the best. So that's what's going to happen. Mm. They gave us a roadmap of what they were going to do, so that's what they were going to do. Mm. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Did they ever say that it might not follow that roadmap?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And but obviously it's...
So you're, but you as a person, like you just said there, you're a glass half full rather than a glass half empty.
Yeah, you've got to be. Got to be. And that's the way I've been brought up and got through things, and I've always been like that.
I found it interesting when you said that you didn't stay around at the hospital. Is that because they didn't give you the opportunity to do that, or was that just a choice that you made between you?
I think that was a choice we made. There's no point. There's nothing to stay for.
The reason I ask you that is because some people... and I'm talking from my own experience now, and I think I've said it before on the podcast that I felt safe at the hospital.
You didn't want to go home,
I didn't want to, no. Yeah. I felt safe. Even though I didn't want to be in hospital, I felt safe in hospital at the same time, because you were around the people that were caring for Amy. That
was the best out of a bad bunch of options.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I did. And yeah, you're right. I didn't want to go home. We ended up going back to Amy's mum and dad, so I was happy with that. But I didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
That environment. And I think part of it as well was that I then knew that when we did leave, that was the next sort of step on the journey.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You're so by yourself at that
point.
And
sometimes you just don't want to go to that next step, do you?
Well, you don't know what you're going to be facing, do you? You don't know how it's going to look. You don't know what it's going to feel like. So
no, and also I think when you know that you've got those nurses and midwives and stuff there, it's you become... Pardon the pun.
Part of the system.
Yeah, and quite childlike at the same time.
Yeah.
Because you know you're getting the support from them and the need from them.
You become reliant on them. But it is interesting to hear what you said, Ian, about you guys like kind of just leaving and getting, like not getting away, that's the wrong term, but making that decision. And it's fascinating because you've got three people in this room who've all lost a baby. And we've all dealt with it so differently, and that's the fascinating part around all of this. It comes back to now, like, so for example, we don't get up and see Callie as much now, and I've had to battle that the last 6 months in my head to figure out actually that's okay to do that. But then comes the question, well, should we have cremated? Because if we cremated, then she'd be with us in the house in the year and that kind of stuff.
But I can counteract that and say, well, we had Lily cremated and we buried her ashes.
Right.
Which some people do as well. So it's like, and I empathise with that, because I think I was talking to you, Dan, not that long ago.
I know where you're going here. I was about to bring it up.
I haven't been to the cemetery for months.
No.
I think the last time I went was Lily's birthday in February.
I went up the other day when I was coming back with Etta from a party, and I went back and I literally, but I only stopped in just to give her a kiss, and then I went on my way again.
Mm.
But I've had to battle that in my head. Literally for the last 6 months, I've been in a battle in my head where I'm like, what? My relationship's beginning to change with that place now. I say that to my clients a lot, that eventually it probably will, but it's okay for it to change.
I'm not sure it's a relationship change with the cemetery and with that place. It's the fact that, as we always say, and what you don't want to hear when you lose a baby, when people say, is that life does go on.
Mm.
Things happen in our lives where it might be that on that, let's say, Sunday afternoon where you used to go, well, maybe on a Sunday afternoon now, there's something else which has taken over that time.
Yeah.
Because you've got
Etta.
And it might be other things.
Yeah.
I don't look at it now, not going to the cemetery as a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I know she's there and I know I can go at any point.
And she's with me anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you... sometimes if you just happen just on your route, going about your day, do you often have to take a route which takes you past where your kids are buried?
I've been past there a few times.
Do you feel guilty if you don't pull in?
Not now.
No.
We don't always pop in, but I always say, hi, Elsie.
Okay.
Yeah. When we drive past.
I'm the same.
Callie, yeah.
And that's the one thing I've always noticed, and which whenever I do drive past it, because the entrance to the cemetery where Lily's ashes are buried is just off a roundabout. It's only a tiny little roundabout. There's four, what is there? There's one, two, three, and then the cemetery entrance.
Okay.
And I'll always look.
Even though
I can't see her grave from there, I'll always look into the cemetery, if there's an acknowledgement of some sort, whether I say it under my breath or whether I'm thinking it or whatever it may be.
So there's a presence about it.
That's just what I was curious about.
How the years change it. Yeah. Where's Elsie then?
She's at St Saviour's Church in Cannock,
okay,
which is just behind the Ego restaurant, if you know it.
How far is that from your house?
About couple of miles tops,
yeah.
But it's the same church we got married in, and so it's a nice little church. It means a lot to us and the family. I think Ruth's grandparents are buried there as well. As I say, we go there, and Ruth always says hey to her grandparents as well. And many a time we take like picnic chairs up there, and just sit with her and get a Costa takeaway or something and go and have a.
Do what you need to do.
With the at Christmas, we do a story. We take a little story up there, book, a different one every year. And it's only been 2 years, but that's what we're going to do. And there's a little, because she's right on the edge of the field, and there's a horse's paddock on the field next door. So whenever we go up there, one of the ponies comes in, puts its head over and eats a bush or something. And it's funny, actually, the day after the funeral, because we left a bouquet of flowers on the grave at the funeral, and I went up there the morning after to collect this bouquet of flowers. And the pony had escaped and was running around the graveyard on the morning after the funeral.
That must have been a sight.
Yeah, and it was magical.
I'd have shit myself. Lots of horse running about the place. Like
Ryan would try and tame it.
I'd jump on its back.
Imagine Ryan jumping on its back. But that was like, there is little moments that sometimes you have to yourself, and I imagine that was almost like. That was a moment for you and for Elsie, right? Almost.
Yeah. Well, you used the word magical, didn't you?
Just that moment of you lost. You're not in society anymore. You're just there at that moment.
Yeah. Why, like, where is he on the moon?
No, but like, oh, this unexpected moment. You know what I'm trying to say? I'm trying to be poetic here.
Getting back to, you know, the emotions of what happened, one massive part of this, especially like we said, with guys, but not exclusively, but mostly aimed at guys on this podcast, your mental mind state and how it affected you with your job. Now, what were you doing for a living at that particular time?
Well, a week before we had Elsie, I'd started a new job. I'd just started working for a charity. It was a blind charity, people with visual impairments.
Right.
And I was there and I'd help people with visual impairments into work.
Okay.
So I'd meet people and that. So I'd been there a week and I'd explained to them that we were having a baby. I didn't explain the circumstances because then they wouldn't have given me a job.
Right.
But
it's all awkward, isn't it?
Yeah. But so I said, obviously once we had it and the situation unfolded, I did have to...
Take some time off.
Yeah. Well, I had 2 weeks off and I should have done more. But
some people need more, and I've noticed some people struggle with taking any. Mm. There's been a lot of people who've...
Well, this
lots
is the
have
thing,
just gone, didn't even take any time off at all.
This is the thing. In one way, I felt obliged to go back.
Was that because it was a new job?
Yeah, obviously. And
right.
In my head, and I went back too soon, and 6 months later, I suffered.
Mm.
And it hit me. I should have taken the time, but I didn't. And I suffered for it, and my mental health suffered for it. And I had a bit of a breakdown 6 months later.
But again, Ian, at that point, no one knows what they're doing.
No, of course.
Right? So you just, you think you're doing it for the right, for the best. And
yeah.
Yeah, because you don't know what
Well, you've never faced anything like this before, right? No. So,
and I mean, obviously, like I say, we discussed it with Ruth and she said, yeah, you should go back and try and get some normality back into life. And
was it a case of everything just, were you bottling things up and doing the cliched guy thing, I'm using quotation marks here, of not opening up, talking, or how did it come, and how did you sense it when, or did it just hit, you know, this breakdown?
Well, yeah, it was just, I just stopped caring about things, and yeah, I'm not in control of the situation, and it's like, I can't deal with this, because glass half full, you kind of look at the positives, so you block out the negatives, but then they come back and haunt you, and it's...
And if you are glass half full, positive mindset, and then that happens, and like you say, you just didn't want to do anything, that's, it sets the alarm bells ringing, isn't it? Because you know your normal style, your normal everyday way of going about life is to have that get up and go. So when you say you didn't want to do anything, was what sort of, was it like a case of not wanting to get out of bed, showering, like that? Were you just going through the motions?
And my heart wasn't in anything, and it's just difficult. I just lost all direction and drive.
How did you get it back?
I did speak to a therapist for a while, and this is where I discovered the Little May. And I've had quite a good few good conversations with Matt, with Ryan as well. And it's just...
Who do you prefer out of the two? So you don't have to answer that. I'm only messing.
The weather's been nice today, hasn't it?
Yeah.
How did you discover it? Was that something you did off your own back, or was Ruth or other people pushing you to do it? Was the whole guy thinking, I'll be all right, I don't want to do it?
Ruth was a big factor and helped me in it. And she says, look, you've got to go and get yourself sorted, and these people, it'll help.
Yeah.
And it did.
Were you reluctant to do it? Was it?
Yeah.
Because that's always a strange thing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You kind of know that this will help, but it's just getting in there.
Yeah. It's like, because I say we've got a good support group around, support network around us.
Okay.
We're both from loving families. We've got good friends. We're both part of a local running club, Penkridge Runners, and they're really good people.
So
and
you had a support network about.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And but it's almost like talking to somebody from the outside who didn't know me, I felt was a bit easier and better.
Okay.
That's interesting. The fact that it was people you hadn't met before.
Yeah, exactly.
You felt more comfortable talking to them than...
Yeah.
Interesting, that is. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, do you think there's a case of, like, if there's some people you don't know so well, that with the social dynamics, you might feel more comfortable opening up with someone because they don't know maybe the levels, the depth, you know, of your relationship. So they'll judge you in a different kind of way. Is it just sometimes nice to talk to a stranger or someone you don't know and get it off your chest because there might not be a comeback from it?
Obviously, they've not known you as before. So you can, if you say you've kicked something, you walk to the doctor, you can say, oh, I've kicked my toe. I've kicked my bed, broke my toe. And then he wouldn't say, well, you should be more careful or anything. He'd sort of fix the toe. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think it's more expectation around. So I've said this before, but I had a person say to me very early on that we want the happy, positive Matt back.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was the expectation around my character, around how I should be. And what Ian's saying there is absolutely right. It's the expectation of how people perceive you.
And then
your life gets flipped upside down and you change, and you change forever. You work your way back to being pretty much the person you were as years go by, but there is that change. There's absolutely that change. And the expectation of you as a person from before the loss is never going to be the same as what it was, as what it is after the loss. And like I said, when I got that comment of that we want the happy, positive Matt back, I simply responded and said, well, you're never going to get that back.
I said exactly the same.
Yeah.
to my head teacher, I remember it.
Yeah, yeah. And actually...
I remember you saying that before.
That was because it was so early on. Now, listen, I am now, I'm still positive and I'm still happy most of the time. But there is that edge that's not there anymore as it was. There's no question about it.
Mm. Yeah, of course. And yeah. I say there are certain things I feel I'm not the same as I was. There are still certain things, triggers, which... But I've learned to deal with them and...
It's still relatively...
That's natural, though. Yeah.
Of course, I like your analogy better than the kick in the bed one. So thanks for that.
No, it's just, it is literally just expectation.
Matt, genuinely, like, we work with the analogy queen.
Yeah.
Like, Amy comes out with some absolute belters.
Yeah. Amy's...
I'm not joking. It's like a mini-series.
It is proper, yeah.
Like, she comes out with some absolute belters.
Yeah, she is.
Amy's Ryan's wife for any new listeners, by the way. An analogy queen.
No, she is.
And honestly, Dan, she comes out, she says, I've gone through a new analogy, and she's, like, talking through it, and we're just sat in the office, like, what the fuck are you going on about?
Do they make sense, though, when you think about it?
They make sense.
There you go.
It's just amazing. It amazes me how her mind works.
Yeah. No, it's different.
Because she's like on a completely different planet.
She is.
Opposites attract and all that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Sorry, can I just say there as well, that actually I think analogies as a whole work really well to be able to help you unscrabble.
Well, it just reframed. It reframes
the mess that's going on. The mess that is going on in your mind. And when I say mess, I mean that loosely, because it is a complete head fuck. The way I explain it is, you know, Mr. Tickle from the Mr. Men.
Yeah, the one with the long arms.
Yes. No, sorry, it might not be Mr. Tickle. Mr. Messy. Sorry, Mr. Messy. Yeah. The one with just like scraggly things, right?
The pink one. Yeah.
I don't know what colour he is. Do you remember as a kid you used to get the? Like the comic books where you had to start at point A and you had to get to the end.
It's like a maze.
I used to get them on the back of the menu at the Burnie Inn.
Yeah.
What a great show.
Yeah. And you had to get, and then you'd like go along this thingy and you'd think, shit, I've hit the wall, I've got to come back. Oh, no, I've got to go around this way. No, I've hit the wall again, I've got to come back. That's grief. That's how it works, basically. Yeah. Some days you can go from A to B quite simply.
Yeah.
Other days you can go from A to A and a half to B and a half to and then you're just all over the place and back to A and you're all over the place.
Yeah.
So can I just clarify, none of that has got anything to do with Mr. Tickle?
No, I know. I can't remember which one it is.
Yeah. It is
Do you know which one I mean? The one that's he's like all squid. It is the pink
it's
one.
Mr.
You're right.
I'm going to Google it.
I've never really watched the Mr. Men. I remember them, but I wasn't into them.
I'm going to Google it.
Coming back to that, Ian, did the therapy ease that?
Yeah.
Did it make it a bit clearer for you a little bit?
Yeah, it was better for me just to speak about it. And as I say, the therapist that I saw, I can't tell you one thing that she did, but
is it how it made you feel?
Yeah. And it was just speaking about it, and she'd ask questions, maybe just a couple of word questions.
You know, sometimes you've been in an environment and you feel good afterwards, but you can't really remember what happened or the reason why, but it's just being in that and the surroundings, just changing the energy that's in the room or around you or anything. So the fact that you said that, you can't remember, there's elements you can't remember, but it's just what happened on the inside with
it. I'm interested in it because I had some not long back, and the thing that really...
get there, Matt.
Yeah, I know, yeah. The thing that really stood out for me was how simple she made the sessions.
Yeah.
And the fact is that you can get really complicated with this kind of stuff, but actually the fact is that what I found worked for me was how simple she kept things, and how she unlocked certain things by just literally being that straightforward.
Well, and they say a problem shared is a problem halved.
Yeah, and it
once you get it out of your head, it's so much smaller, and you can deal with it.
And there was no huge complication around what she did with it, but it just helps.
She's
so
clearly
much.
Skilled in effective communication, because you can get 10 people in a room and they're there to say the same point, and they'll all say it in different ways. Yeah. And there will be one person out of those 10 that resonates with you in a whole different way. And for someone else, it will be another person out of that group of 10. It's just how that, you know, their style of communication crossed with how you listen.
And that's what I was just about to say, is just to cover our arses, just so people don't think that the simplest way is the way. because it's not for everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
But but in terms of, like, it's the same with learning, isn't it? You have kinesthetic learners, you have people that
visual learners,
auditory, whatever it may be. And what works for one maybe doesn't work for another. Yeah. But you are right in the respect of sometimes keeping it as simple as possible. Mm. But that's the type of therapy that you guys have had. Other types of therapy need to delve in a little bit deeper and look and open doors that maybe have been closed.
Ian, how are you feeling being on the show? You okay?
Yeah, yeah.
It's always interesting.
Now. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
There's something I want that you alluded to earlier. Now, you are blind in one eye, not 100%, is it?
Yeah.
Are you okay talking about this?
Yeah, yeah.
So you had, I think when you were like early teenager, you had an accident in you and quite serious, very serious. Well, I say quite, very serious.
Yeah.
What happened?
I was hit by a car on my bike. I was airlifted to Birmingham Children's Hospital, incidentally. Broke my arm, my leg and back of my head. I was in a coma for 6 weeks.
Do you remember any of like the leading, obviously not the coma, but before? Do you remember being out on the bike?
No. Why? No, I can't remember anything.
So you were, 13, you said?
Yeah.
And it left you have a visual impairment?
Yeah. I'm not registered a visual impairment at all or anything like that. Not really.
So you've already battled with adversity. With, you know, just growing up in a way which would have been, especially because you're, what I mean by this is teenagers are, you know, it's a tough time, especially with the way that other teenagers talk to other teenagers. So you've been in a coma, you come back. What do you think, like, in terms of your character, going through something like this to mould you into the person that you are?
Yeah, of course, obviously, people are shaped, moulded by what's happened. It's easy to say, oh, if that hadn't have happened, you would be like this. But you can't say that because...
You don't know, mate.
If... I was watching Final Destination the other night.
Oh, which one? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 or 10?
No, it was the first one, actually. And it was like saying, oh, if they hadn't been in that accident at the start, then would they have gone on to something else?
Right.
But then it's like, if that hadn't have happened, then something else would have happened. So
you can't
define... life by one event.
I love the fact you said that.
Yeah, I like that.
It's just not the way it works. When I was at school, and it was in year 8 before the accident, I was in the top set of school, and just before the accident, I remember I'd had my first cigarette. I was going down the bad route. Well, not a bad route, but I was getting mixed up with naughty kids, like. I was getting a bit...
Yeah.
That's my prison terminology again. but it was just like maybe a wake-up call.
Okay. So It shaped you.
Yeah, so if you think of it like that, then it's kind of...
So Elsie's helped shape you as well, right?
Of course. Yeah. Of course, like I say, with the things we've done since Elsie's passing has made us better people.
And it's her legacy, right?
Yeah, exactly. After the funeral, we had a collection of people wanting to donate money to us to help us pay for the funeral costs. But babies' funerals cost very little anyway. So we had a little pot of money, about 300 quid.
Okay.
Me and Ruth, we said, what should we do with it? And we decided the best thing to do was split it between a charity which had helped us called Little Hearts Matter. Sorry. I hadn't met you guys then.
I've heard of them anyway, yeah.
Yeah, and...
Well, who's that? Little Hearts Matter,
yeah, yeah.
And Ward 11 at Birmingham Children's Hospital, which is where Elsie was.
Yeah.
So I phoned up the ward and I said, look, I spoke to the ward sister, Anita, and I said, look, we've got this little pot of money. How do we donate it to you? And she says, I'll just do it through the reception desk downstairs. Mm. I'm like, well, that's kind of impersonal. I want to give it directly to you.
Mm.
Is there any way I could buy something physical and give it to you?
Yeah.
And she was like, well, we always have to nappies, baby grows, hats, socks, gloves.
Okay.
Because babies got poor circulation, so they get cold. So I had a light bulb moment. I thought, aha, what if we were to make a shoebox kind of thing?
Okay.
Containing one of each of them things.
Yeah.
And then you can give it to the parents as they come on the ward. And then I spoke to Ruth. I knew Ruth would be really good at this. And because I knew Ruth was going to have her 9 months maternity leave.
Okay.
So I thought, this will be something for Ruth to do. And she'll get on this and she'll be really, really good at this. She loved the idea and it developed in that. And then we started putting more stuff in and we put stuff for the parents as well.
Yeah.
So puzzle book, toothbrush, toothpaste, shower gel, just little travel ones. Just because...
If you're on a ward for a while...
Exactly.
Yeah,
when you put on that ward, because you're waiting for a gap, so there's a little window where you get onto the ward, and you've got nothing.
Got nothing, yeah.
Can I just say, again, just because it's one of my favourite ways a word is pronounced in this part of the world, in Birmingham, UK. But for anyone else, or maybe listening around the world who doesn't know what tuth is.
Tuth. Yeah.
Because you mentioned the toothpaste.
Toothpaste.
That's how we say it, isn't it? Tuth.
Tuff.
And my tuth fell out. You what?
You're tuth. It's not tooth.
We developed this LC box, we call it. So we've developed that, and through the power of Facebook, we started shouting out, talking about it, and people donated us. Our running group was probably the first people to donate. They had a collection and they donated us like £600.
Oh, that's great.
And we went to the beach in Anglesey. Ruth's into sea glass, so we like to look for sea glass on the beaches, which is glass, broken glass, which has been in the sea for years, and it's got all rounded, and it's really, really interesting to find this different glass, and you think what the story behind it and that.
Yeah.
Me and Ruth, we were looking on this one beach and we couldn't find any glass anywhere. And we were like, oh, and then we went back to the where we'd put the bags and that. And then there was one little piece just there within a metre of the bags. And we were like, oh, how did we miss that? And then Ruth was like, well, that's Elsie, that is.
Right.
Elsie found that one.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah.
And it's like little things like that, and like people have said to us, if something's moved around the house, then it's Elsie.
Yeah.
So whenever I lose something, I'm like, oh, well, that's Elsie again. And Ruth's like, no,
took me keys again.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this episode, Ian. We really, really, really appreciate it. Is there anything before we wrap up this episode that you'd like to mention, or Ryan and Matt, is there anything that you would like to bring up?
No, I just want to say thank you to Ian for sharing his story. I know it's not easy to be able to come on to a podcast, certainly when it's live as well, where you're speaking to not just us, but the many people that are watching at the same time. And then when it's edited, going out to however many around the world, it's not easy to be able to tell your story. And you've told it with great dignity, and I'm sure Elsie will be extremely proud of you.
What are the plans moving forward? Is it a conversation you've had yet with trying again?
Yeah.
Because you don't have any other children at this moment in time, do you?
We don't have any other children.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we are trying, and obviously when it happens, it happens. And that's all you can say, isn't it?
We've been
trying, and...
Yeah.
One of our recent guests, instead of trying, he said, I've got to go home. We've got some practicing to do.
It was Brownie, weren't it?
Yeah, it's just gone. It's called The Boys. That's the
boys.
Name of the
episode. Yeah. Practicing. Yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah, it was well, we best not keep you any longer then, if that's the case, Ian.
Yeah.
Ruth's actually gone away this week.
Thank you very much for joining us on this episode, Ian. And for anyone listening who would like to hear Ian's mini episode for Baby Loss Awareness Week and all the other things he's mentioned on this particular episode, the links will be in the description for that. Our website, stillparentspodcast.co.uk, and Still Parents Podcast on the socials. If you get an opportunity to drop us a review as well, we always mention this. Even if it's just a sentence, it really, really helps us. The main reason, just to help get discovered, push up the algorithms and other words like that, which I know how to say but don't necessarily understand. So if you do get a moment or two, we'd really appreciate it. This is the Still Parents Podcast, supported by Globals Make Some Noise, with the guest on this episode, Mr. Ian Rowlands. Thank you, Ian.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. Could I read my poem?
Of course you can.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course you can, yes.
You can end on the poem, actually.
Yeah. When did you write this?
After we lost Elsie, so we had a bit of therapy, and they said it would be good to write some thoughts down.
Yeah.
Thoughts and feelings and that. So I did.
And go then, for it, yeah.
And then it rhymed. So when she was taken away, our world fell down. You hear stories like this, the sad tales get around. Your hopes and dreams are dashed on the rocks. You've been waiting for years. Now I could wish I could turn back the clocks. Give her another chance. It wasn't her fault. But it's us who have to suffer and open the vault. Her feelings and pains you don't ever want to know. You wouldn't wish this on your enemies. It should never be so. But it will happen again, just as it has before. We can help lighten the load, help the families up off the floor. We were given a chance to make a difference in your name. Help the little new families who are going through the same. We can show love and comfort. Let them know they're not alone. Help parents help their babies look after their own. By building these boxes, it's helped us get through. We'll never forget the lessons we learned from you. Lessons of love and how precious life can be. We now get out and about and see all we can see. You helped us, now we help you. Leave a mark on this world. You'll never be forgotten, our little girl. Yes, your legacy lives on. She can still do her part. The tiniest feet leave the biggest footprints in our heart. I've got that last line tattooed on my...
I was going to ask you about that tattoo. That was brilliant.
It's amazing.
I've got that on my back. Sorry, I've got that on my back as well.
Love it.
That's great. Amazing.
Yep, love that.
Thank you very much for sharing that, Ian.
Yeah.
And once again, thank you for joining us on this episode.
Thanks for having me.
You've been fantastic. And anytime you'd like to join us back on again, whether it's for a full episode, just for a few minutes, or join us with somebody else, you are always more than welcome, as is anyone else. Whether you are listening to this for the first time or you've been a long-time listener and you are thinking that you're ready or you'd like to say a few words, if you're at that point, please reach out and get in touch. We are here to accommodate you in whatever way we can to make you feel comfortable. So with that in mind, thank you very much, everyone. This is the Still Parents Podcast. Look after yourself, and we will be back very, very soon.
The Still Parents Podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.